Today's episode is brought to you by VII Apparel Company, the ultimate apparel company, now offering made-in-Europe fully sublimated team gear, as well as custom neckies. Check out viiapparel.co to start your order today. Welcome to Eurozone, the podcast about European Ultimate. I'm Ravi Vasudevan, joined here by Liam Grant. Liam, it's been a minute since we've talked. It hasn't been so much news, but I think both of us are on some form of lockdown. Actually, at this point, just as of 8 minutes ago, I'm now in lockdown in my house as well. I'll get into that, but how are you holding up there in Ireland?
Doing well. We're also in lockdown 2, Electric Boogaloo. That's the name I've given it for the new lockdown. More kind of jazzy, fun lockdown.
It's only a couple instances where the sequel's better than the original, but most of the time, sequels are worse. What do you think about this time with the lockdowns?
I think it's going to be like The Matrix.
That's really bad.
We're going to get another one as well, and it's going to be bad as well.
It's just going to get progressive. But The Matrix, at least the first one was good. Was our first lockdown that good? I mean, I guess we had, what do we have, like Tiger King? What was one of the highlights of the first lockdown?
Yeah, there was. Where is our Tiger King? The Last Dance? There was a novelty factor to it as well, I think. Like, I'm not doing a fucking family Zoom quiz. I definitely did that during lockdown, or like pelted like quizzes. Everyone's doing these quizzes and it was like, the world's mad. Now it's just like, okay, I'm totally fucking over this. So yeah, that's why I'm getting a fun name, because it's not fun at all. Lockdown 2, Electric Boogaloo.
You guys are on full lockdown. Here in France, we have curfew. Because I think COVID only comes out at night in France. So we can't leave our houses from 9 p.m. to 6 a.m.
It's nocturnal.
We are not nocturnal. We are the opposite of nocturnal. But the virus is nocturnal, I guess. I don't know. So yeah, eventually they're going to have to force people to go work from home, because the cases in France have skyrocketed. I don't know what it's like in Ireland, but like, it's way worse than before. And the death counts and hospitalizations haven't quite, that usually lags a bit. So that's probably coming in the next couple of weeks, that's going to peak up. But yeah, not looking good over on the French side.
Yeah, we're full like 5 kilometer restrictions. Like, we're full lockdown. The whole thing. Okay. For 6 weeks, apparently. They're saying it's like to save Christmas. I don't get that. It's like,
that's what they're saying?
Yeah, we're doing this. I think that's kind of narrative around the world as well. They're like, I think Italy's going into one. They're like, we're doing it to save Christmas. It's like, may sound like it's a Christmas movie, but like most Christmas movies, sucks.
Do you guys do Halloween in Ireland? Like, do kids trick-or-treat and stuff? Or is that not...
I think it's originally like an Irish pagan holiday. I think we invented Halloween.
Yeah.
Yeah, how now?
You'll certainly take credit for it anyways.
Like, old Hallow's Eve is like the Night of the Dead. So we do Halloween.
Do you think it's canceled? Like, are kids going to be allowed... You can't go house to house getting candy from everyone this year.
Yeah, I don't think there'll be any trick or treating. Still carve some pumpkins.
Carve a pumpkin or two.
Pumpkin carving is in. Back in hard right now. No, I don't think there'll be any trick-or-treating. When we were kids, used to go egg things. Maybe people go egging. You just go to the supermarket on like Halloween and like, I'm buying 12 eggs and I'm like 12 years old. And they're like, we're not selling you eggs. And we'd throw them at people's cars and then they'd get angry at us and chase us through a field. That was my memories of Halloween.
That was your childhood?
Yeah. Or fireworks. Oh, fireworks. Oh.
Yeah. Yeah, we did like the fireworks, toilet papering, egging type of stuff. But I'm curious what's going to happen this year. I don't know. In the U.S., there's no rules anyway, so they'll probably just have trick-or-treating as per normal. But not looking great. We still have frisbee practice. We're allowed to have frisbee practice, but we're doing it from 7 to 8:30, and then we have to be home by 9. Like, that's the thing. So, yeah. Only works for people that live a half hour from the fields, I guess, max.
That's so hilarious. Doesn't make any sense. Why is time such a big constraint as opposed to like what you're actually doing?
I think the logic was, because the original curfews were just in the cities that had huge outbreaks earlier, and then they kind of extended to the rest of the country. And those cities were all university towns. So I think they just wanted to stop university kids from partying with each other. That's the main thing, is to stop partying from happening, I guess. But I think they're eventually going to have to do a lockdown again. I think, you know, I'm not that in tune with what the economics were of the last lockdown, how expensive it was or whatever. But like, I guess that's what they're scared of, having to do that again and having more unemployment and all that kind of stuff. So Yeah. And they're trying to just like, they think some measure of having it from 9 p.m. to 6 a.m. will do something, but I can't imagine it's going to do that much. The bars are all closed down and restaurants are still open, but they have to be out of there by like 8:30, 8:45 and go home. But I think eventually stricter lockdown is going to have to happen just based on what's happened with the cases here.
As long as young people aren't having fun, that's all
exactly.
I care.
Exactly. That's the most important thing.
No fun allowed. COVID preys on fun.
COVID loves fun.
So this podcast should be fun.
And so Ireland, I guess in Ireland, practices are totally done, canceled.
Yeah, I just wasn't even doing anything anyway, to be honest. I think, yeah, I don't know. No, we're like full throttle lockdown. Like there's no restaurants aren't open, only takeaway. Like no hairdressers or barbers and stuff open. Yeah, we're not allowed to do anything sports together. We're back to like exercising on our own, 5K runs and stuff like that.
But only 5K. You can't. I mean, I guess you could do a 10K if you run 5K away and back. That's a you're allowed to do that. That's the max you could do.
Yeah, I enjoyed last lockdown as well because it's sunny, but the weather's been absolutely shite. That I've not been like going for cycles and runs and stuff. Doing some cooking. Making some Massaman curries.
Oh, Massaman curry, dude. That's my jam. We make Massaman curry all the time. That's like our one of our go-to meals. You get some peanuts and sweet potatoes in there?
Peanuts, definitely. I use 100% peanut butter. Wait, do I do my Massaman curry? That's a different curry. Tamarind. Tamarind is key.
Tamarind is very key to a good Massaman curry. That's for sure.
Fish sauce or fishy juices.
Yeah, that's what I don't. Obviously, I don't put that.
Oh, yeah. I don't
put that in my curry. Anyways, all right, so we got a few things to talk about. We can talk a little bit about this Ulti-League campaign today, talk a bit more about what the new club season is looking like it might look like for the European series next year or at least in the future years. But first off, you were on another podcast there, Liam. You were over on our good daddy podcast, Deep Look.
I get around.
Going there, cheating on Eurozone.
Yeah. I was, and I'll do it again, goddammit.
How did you enjoy that, talking about party tournaments with Charlie and Keith? That was interesting.
It was a weird conversation, yeah. One, it was like, I've been on other podcasts where usually I'm being interviewed or interviewing someone, but we had like a three-way conversation, which is not something I've actually ever done before. Mm-hmm. It's kind of tricky. It was hard to do well. I also found out they're like, we're going to talk about party tournaments, and then like halfway through I realized they actually haven't been to any of them.
Yeah, that's what I was going to say. Like, it was a little like, this sounds like a party. And like, you don't go to any party tournaments.
Yeah. It's like, wow, this is really the wrong cast here. Like, I've definitely been to the most party tournaments in America, having only been there for 1 year of my life. Basically, Keith's gone to Poultry Days and Charlie's gone to Wildwood. And that was pretty much it. So I was carrying the team.
Yes. I mean, some of those categories, it got a little weird and it sounded like you were trying to get them to like land on a top one for each category, but they just kind of, it just became like a weird conversation in each category. You didn't really like make it like a list in the end, but yeah, it's interesting.
I liked how, I was like, oh, categories is okay. Like, oh, do beach and party and Charlie's like, that's the same thing. I'm like, yes, it is in America. There is no competitive beach. If it is, it probably sucks. So
Didn't mention like that beach nationals they have over in America, which I don't think anybody cares about except for Tim Morrell. And that's
I've played you, Miss Swag. I'm an honorary member. I could go play that.
Oh, yeah?
My only chance of winning a USA Nationals would be to piggyback on that team again. Yeah, I don't think anyone really cares about the beach nationals. I kind of like how they don't like beach. Americans, it's like our secret they're missing out on, because I actually love beach.
Beach is great, man.
I really like a lot of the beach tournaments in Europe. I think are some of the best tournaments, the ones in Canaries, in just anything in the Iberian Peninsula tends to be quite good. Yes, but no, France, there's a lot of, they just I think suit me better. I like playing sand better. It's usually a more party atmosphere, so Charlie's right about that in a way. But yeah, it's fun being a Deep Look. Like, I think we got better production quality. We're using the audio thingy, whatever it's called. And it was hard. I guess Charlie's internet wasn't that good, or he was away or something. So it was like, it was tricky.
Yeah.
It was tricky. I didn't quite land as many jokes as I wanted to.
The one party tournament that I think you need to consider, and of course I'm biased. You guys didn't mention Monkey Foo, man.
I knew. I purposely left that out just to I knew your ears are burning listening to the pod. It's like, well, surely Monkey Foo is going to come up any second now. I'm going to leave out my favorite tournament. I knew they weren't going to mention it. I had it written down their list in front of me. I was like, no Monkey. Just to annoy Ravi.
No way they've heard of it. I mean, it's a much smaller tournament, but open bar, man. Open bar.
Yeah.
Monkey Foo's awesome.
I think that and Kaimana are probably the only tournaments I know at open bar. Well, Hilo Hat, which is also kind of Kaimana. They did that as well. Makes a big difference, open bar. Different vibe.
Yeah. I played Bangkok Hat in Thailand. That was also open bar. That was a lot of fun. Yeah, you guys didn't, it wasn't too much mention of the Asian tournaments. You guys mentioned Boracay and Manila, but I guess you don't have as much experience on that scene. I think there's some good tournaments there that probably would have got shot. You guys didn't talk about Dream Cup as a competitive tournament. I thought that maybe would have come up.
Oh, the ground just looks so bad. If anywhere, like the fields are like, that's why I hate Wildwood or like Chum of Vegas, the fields are terrible as well. Anywhere that's like the fields are rubbish, I just immediately write off. I don't want to go play somewhere where the grass is shite. Now, Mount Fuji in the background is kind of cool, but turf or whatever that is, the sand pit or muck they play in.
Another cool tournament, talking about a volcano in the background. I've played this. It's the volcanic tournament in Costa Rica. I was in Costa Rica for something else, and I was there for the first edition of that, and that's actually really cool. You play near the Arenal volcano, and it's like on these fields there, and you can do like a rainforest hike, and there's like a big, you know, hat tournament over there. That's also really fun for picturesqueness. But yeah, I would love like some people to comment on that episode and talk about, because I think there's a lot of gems like that that like not any individual doesn't know anything. Definitely Charlie and Keith that only follow US like big competitive tournaments aren't going to know about cool other tournament experiences. But maybe we can try and get some people on to talk a bit more about that, because I think that could be something cool to talk about, just so we can inform other people of tournaments that they can get on their bucket list. Maybe they haven't talked about. Good topic for another episode.
Who do you think would be the best people to talk about party tournaments in the world?
The best people to talk about party tournaments in the world?
Besides me, obviously.
Yeah, you'd be pretty good. I know friend Carly Blair. I think she's a pretty avid party tournament circuit person.
Yeah, she'd probably want to. She does go to that cult bar the Pixie, though. That's a cult. That's not a tournament. That's some weird cult thing that Patrick and some people get nude on the beach for a week.
Have you played that one before?
No. Okay. It's a little too deep in the ultimate weirdness for me, I think.
Definitely for me. I mean, you're closer to the ultimate weirdness than I am, and it's too far for you. Like, for that type of podcast, we should get somebody that's in the ultimate weirdness to talk more about that side of the sport. That could be something cool to talk about.
Well, so you meet Kyle Fraser. He used to do design stuff, I think, for Five. He goes to a crazy amount of party tournaments, and he's a really funny guy.
Mm-hmm.
He'd be brilliant for it. Pat and Tad don't do that many either. They've never been a windmill either. I don't know. They need to do more. They'd be the siege. That's it.
Well, you talked about making the team Eurotrash, which I like, which we've been trying to get this project of a Sin the Field / Eurozone team at Windmill. I think Eurotrash is a good name. Let's see if we can make that happen next year, if Windmill happens again, ever.
I presume my free bid falls over. I had to pay back that guy, by the way.
Yeah, I know. You mentioned that in a previous episode. Okay, so let's move on to talking a bit about some Ultimate stuff. And I guess there's actually some news in Europe is that Ulti League finished their fundraising campaign. I don't know how much of the Ulti League stuff we talked about on the podcast, but just to recap for the people who haven't been listening in a while, Ulti League is this new kind of fan-funded mixed league is what they're trying to be, where fans can pay 10 euros to be a member of Ulti League. And then with that, they get like votes into random things, including which teams get to play it. And they wanted to have a 2020 showcase event, and I don't remember exactly when they launched this, but like they were like, oh, we're going to have an international tournament in November. And I was like, are you?
Just saying that was the most concise explanation of what Ulti League is I've heard. If Milan, you're listening, can you take that snippet of Ravi explaining it and just release that? Because it's been very confusing otherwise. But go on, sorry to interrupt you, but I was like, wow, that actually, I kind of know what it is now.
Well, yeah, there was an article I wrote like trying to explain what Ulti League was, and I had a lot of people text me saying, oh, thank God, I actually kind of understand what's going on now. Milan, he's a great guy, but he doesn't always know how to communicate his ideas in a concrete way that's understandable to the masses. He's got so much stuff going on in his brain that it's just like not always clear. And like when I wrote those articles, I've written two articles in Ulti League, I had to like talk to him a lot to kind of pull the concrete ideas from his nebulous brain out of there. But we landed on something like that. So they had a campaign. They said which teams want to play in this showcase event, and they got six teams interested. And they basically said, okay, for those six teams, we want you guys to compete online and like get fans to become multi-league members. And the four teams with the most fans or the most votes, because each fan can buy, you can buy as many votes as you want. If you want to spend 100 euros to get 10 votes, you can do that. So basically, whichever team raises the most money from this membership drive, the four teams that from that will get to play in our showcase event. And they had a goal, which until they released the fact that they didn't reach the goal, I don't think they ever mentioned this to the fans that they were trying to get 12,000 euro, which is the thing that, you know, maybe they should do if they're trying to reach that, like tell people.
You don't need to know what the goal is, you know. You know what the goal is, you're going to aim for that, Ravi. So that's, you don't want that. You want it to be confusing and shady.
So anyways, the four teams that did the best were the Mighty Hucks. I think they're from mostly Birmingham, UK. Hässliche Erdferkel, Smog, and Itzaka, which is No Good Yaka, the mixed team combining those two teams from Noisy-le-Sec in France. And then 3SB and Zawiórka from Czech Republic and Poland. Of course, the poorest nations of the ones that applied didn't raise as much money as the others. So in this league where whoever is the richest teams get to play, that's kind of how it played out. So they only raised 3,590 euros out of the 12,000. So a combination of not reaching their funding goal and the fact that obviously with the way things are going in Europe, there's no way you could have an international event right now. They're not going to do it this year. They're going to try and take this and have something happen next year. But I don't know. I wanted to get your thoughts, Liam, here and maybe talk a bit about what we think about this Ulti-League thing now that maybe you understand it better that I've explained it to you. The basic idea is they want to, instead of having players fund the tournaments through players' fees and stuff like that, they think it's better if fans pay for it and then they get some kind of community membership where they get voting rights and then they get access to some live streams and it's funded through fans instead of players. And they say, yeah, we need 12,000 euros. So I guess they need to have 1,200 fans support the four different teams that are going. What do you think of this idea in general? Do you think it's going to go somewhere or what?
I think Milan is great. Well, like there is no fans for one. Like, let's be honest, let's be real here. There is no fans right now. So there's no fans. Mm-hmm. There's players. So ironically, to start us off, he's pretty much trying to get the players to pay for it, which is what he's not trying to do. But that's what's happening. And not enough players paid for it to happen this time around. I don't know. Like, I like how Ultimate is in Europe and you have tournaments and you pay them and you go. And we're not really fan-focused. We're more player-focused. And that's what I like doing and playing. Could there be a market for this? Definitely. It's probably the worst time ever to try and do something like this. So, yeah, you got to feel it from a little bit there, you know?
I think for sure.
Yeah, we got to point that out. Not that he's like, I think from the start, he needed to have some kind of minimal viable product, do some kind of test event and stuff like that, which is where he's kind of ended up at now, but it didn't really seem like that's what he was trying to do at the start. He eventually got to here, which I think is not a bad idea, doing some kind of little test event, but he needs probably need somebody to reach into their pocket and do it, an investor or themselves or somebody to front the money to start things off. I don't think you're going to be able to get the money to get it from players when they don't really know if it's going to work or what they're getting. So maybe you can find something like that's going to give you the money, sponsor it, or just invest or own something. But
yeah,
it's really hard to make, yeah, you know, fans pay for it when there isn't any fans yet. So I don't know. It's hard. I admire the crew for trying to do it. You know, if it worked, that'd be great. It would be amazing, but it's going to be really hard. What's your thoughts?
Yeah, I think you nailed a lot of it there. And the question is like, yeah, there's a few thousand Ultimate players in Europe. So if all of them chipped in 10 euro, we could make something happen, right? But like, do most of those players want to fund a few elite people like the chance to play a showcase event? I don't think most of them really care. And that's that chicken and egg thing. Like when the AUDL started, they had to build up a fan base and they invested with risk. And still people argue whether they're really making any money or not, but they're at least still going after all these years. And part of that was like, okay, we got to get in and build a fan base. And they seem to be trying to start it with what we have here. And I don't know that it's really there. Again, maybe a lot of people didn't join in because they didn't understand what it was. Maybe a lot of people didn't join in because they realize that an event in November doesn't make any sense. So like there's not a concrete thing they were really funding. And maybe if there was a concrete thing they were funding, more people would care. But yeah, they said like they want every team to have 200 fans fund it. And if that's what they're aiming for, like how many teams have 200 fans that are dedicated enough to put money towards that team? Like none of them. I don't know. Like some of them maybe have 200 followers on Facebook, but that doesn't cost anything. So I don't know. Like I think Ultimate's a very watchable sport. I watch a lot of Ultimate. I think it's a great sport to watch. We have a media company devoted to promoting Ultimate to whatever fans care about the European version of the sport. That's like what we're doing. Can something professional happen? Maybe, but I'm just not sure this is the right way to do it. Like you said, I think you need to kind of put some investment in and take that risk and then see if it goes somewhere. And that's, I think, part of it. I think with AUDL and PUL, and there were people putting their money where their mouth was to like say, we want to make this thing happen. And with LT League, it seems like we want you guys to put your money where our mouth is and make it happen. And like they could maybe get that when they earn that trust from the community. But I find that a very hard sell before they're like getting their own skin in the game. You know what I mean?
Yeah. What's going to happen to the money that's been put in already?
So I did ask him this in the first article, like when the campaign was starting, what's going to happen if you can't do the event? And he said, like, we're not looking to refund people. We think they're just investing in the idea and the campaign. And if they really say, hey, we wanted this event to happen, give us our money back, yeah, we'll probably be amenable to that. But they don't want to do that. They kind of want to push this into the next iteration so that they can use this funding for the next time to do it. So I think from what I understand, that's what's going to happen, is that they're just going to push it to next year.
So what happens to the team that like got the most votes and paid the most stuff?
So they did say that the top four teams here will have spots next year. Like they have won their spot for the first showcase event, whenever that may be. So that's what they have now.
Cool.
So congrats to the Mighty Hawks. I mean, this is another thing about it, is that, I mean, and the AUDL started this way too. Like Aired Ferricle is obviously a top notch team. Smog, we thought were a top team, but they didn't do that well at the UCF last year. And Itzaka, I think, would be very strong. I mean, they have two strong single gender teams, and if they came together, probably in the mixed division, they would do quite well. Mighty Hucks, I know they do well like at UK tour stuff, but they don't play internationally really at all. These aren't like the best teams in Europe even. And how good is Ultimate in Europe really to start with? And then if you're not even taking the cream of the crop from Europe, like can we really make a fan serviced league thing from what we have here? I don't want to be too negative on what we've got going on here.
Shitting on European Ultimate again. Here goes Ravi. Not good enough. I think the Mighty Hawks are a great team. And they're loads of
fun. Do you know anything about them? Do you know anything about them?
I've played them once or twice, maybe tour. Obviously beat them. But I think Irish mixed team and stuff like that. But they're actually pretty fun. And actually are some good players that aren't probably more casual. But it's or maybe kind of more mixed focused. But yeah, I think they're actually all good teams for this, because they're actually all likable teams, and I think they're all around the same level and positive and kind of, I'm not surprised these are teams that bought into this, because I think they're very kind of like, want to showcase mixed and good kind of fun communities. So yeah, I think maybe it is the right community to do with these teams. Like, I think if you try to like force the Clapham players stuff into it now, they probably just wouldn't buy into it yet, you know? I think the team's actually probably the right teams for it, but yeah, it's more the other issues.
I'm surprised a bit about Krut not joining in. I'm curious why they didn't buy in. Maybe they can let us know. It seems like a thing they would be totally into. And you know, if you got Krut and you got Salispils and then you added the top teams from this, I think then we'd have really something that would be really cool. What I think might be really interesting, and I think something that Europe could do, is try and do this not as club teams, and this is like a totally out there idea, but have this be like a World Games style national team thing, where you get really small teams from each country, you find some people you trust to make like a national team of your top men's and women's players. And that's something that like the country communities will get behind, because like clubs don't have fan bases, but a national team could get its community behind it as a fan base. And that's the thing that I think is unique about World Games, is you get the top players playing mixed. So if we could have that happen, where each like country would get a World Games type team together just for this Ulti League special thing, that's something I think is more sellable and something that they could maybe generate more buzz around. I mentioned this to Milan before, but yeah, that's where I think if you wanted to go with this plan, that's the way I would do it.
Okay, Ravi's going to run his own Ravi League.
That is not what I said. Okay, yeah, that'll do it for Ulti League. And we'll go to a quick break from Savage Ultimate. And when we get back, we'll talk about the European Ultimate Club Series.
Chicago.
Savage Apparel has been rebranded to VII Apparel. VII still offers custom team gear made and produced in Europe for European customers. Visit viiapparel.co to start your team order today. VII offers Greenline products including fully sublimated long sleeves, shorts, tank tops, and sun hoodies. Greenline plastics are 100% made from recycled plastic bottles. They offer UPF 50 plus sun ratings. Plus there's free shipping on all team orders over 500 euros. They also offer free assistance on artwork for all team orders. Go to viiapparel.co for more information. That's viiapparel.co and let them know that Eurozone sent you. Okay, next topic of conversation is the European Club Series. So I was curious, first of all, for those of you who didn't listen, we talked about this before, that the European Ultimate Federation is trying to reshape the club series. And there's some task forces that are going on right now. And for full disclosure, I'm on both the media task force and the European Ultimate Club Series transition task force. So I have a bit of knowledge inside as to what might be going on there. But
you're just jealous of me being on all these cool committees that you wanted to be on, Lisa.
I do like Ultimate.
I like European Ultimate. European committees for stuff. I think that's what you
mean. Thanks. I just do it for your approval, Liam. That's the main reason why I got into this. So we talked about it before, that they want to have more of kind of like a regular season with some events before. And they had this like kind of Q&A session, and they released a little bit of what that's going to look like. It's still not set in stone, and it's still going to be probably a transition over some years to get there. But it seems like what they really want to do is have an event in April that's kind of like a US Open type of event, where it's one special top tier event where only maybe the top 8 to 12 teams in each division have a nice event then that'll be like showcased and all kinds of stuff and out of the way of the other events in May and June. And alongside that, there's probably going to be an event for like the next tier of teams as well, like whatever after the top tier event. Then in the fall, they were thinking about having kind of a split, like maybe splitting the top 16 or top 32 teams into two different tournaments, maybe East or West or North or South or something like that. And then having those be like the required type of tournaments. I don't know if they would even require it. They're still working on those details. And then the question they're still trying to figure out is, can they put more stuff into the algorithm, like national championships or external tournaments or whatever? And then basically all of that they put into a big data algorithm type of thing. And then by the end of it, they rank the top 16 teams. And then directly through that, they qualify to the EUCF. And there isn't any more regionals because there's a lot of people who don't like regionals. Liam's not one of them. So I'm curious, Liam, last time we talked about this, Liam was completely against this idea. He hated it. He thought it was going to kill European Ultimate and it would be the death of everybody. And wondering how you still feel about that, if your thoughts have changed at all, or if you're still on that same opinion.
Samesies. I'd be okay maybe testing it, like let it be known that it's a test. Okay, this year we're going to try something different, but it's not like we're fully committed to doing it that way. I just think more commitment in terms of tournaments you have to go to. I'm a little confused about this April tournament again. Like, who goes to that? What happens if you don't go? That's going to hurt your rank. Yeah, I kind of like our system for the most part. I think regionals is fun. Yeah, I don't buy this whole like season-long thing I don't know. I kind of like the way it is. No to change. Against change. No change.
Against change. Yeah. Yeah, I'm coming around a lot to it. I think having an April event, that's really cool. I think getting more opportunities for our top teams to really play together and have more games at the highest level is something
Event not Tom's tourney or the Blondie invite? Are they not like the lead events that happen at that time? Would this be a rival event or would be one of them?
Yeah, so, I mean, it wouldn't be Tom's tourney, obviously, but it could be Bologna invite. I could imagine, I mean, Bologna is really into this idea, so... or at least Davide is. So I know that he wants to turn this into a regular season type of thing. So I could imagine that Bologna Invite could just become this April event, or they may be hosted in different places every year, but it could be that there's some big official event that happens where it just counts a bit more because it counts towards an official ranking. And talking a bit more, which I did to the EUF after our podcast, they did mention that, yeah, the South was an issue with CUSB and whatever, but a lot of another issue was the North and how things go there and how, like, you know, they've had some regionals where three teams show up and it's really expensive for them to get there. And then it's not worth it because, like, there aren't really that many games that matter because, yeah, there's not that many teams that are good. Whereas if they had a more European event, maybe they'd be more interested and we could cycle around where it would be so that people could go, you know, some of them would be over there in the North or over there in the East. And I think for one thing, they really need to put some of these tournaments in the East because that's where, like, you know, all these poorer countries exist, and make the Western European countries travel out there rather than having them all have to come over to,
yeah,
you know, France and Germany.
And we can parade around like kings with all our Western European money.
Yeah, Ireland is the one out. But your GDP per capita is so high. Why don't you just get some of that sweet Apple money?
We want them to have it. We want to great extents to make sure that it does not trickle down to anyone and they keep all of it. You know, I just think it's ironic and funny that, like, everyone just looks at their GDP and it's like, why don't you guys have any? I don't know. They build shiny buildings in Dublin City, so that's all that matters. I think the North is the problem. I said that last time. I think there's a compelling argument that something has to change there because every other region is fine and competitive and interesting. And, like, I know Bologna were like, oh, we beat some people this year, but it's like the first time ever in the South. Otherwise, the South has been a really good tournament and competitive. But the North is a problem. Such a big spread out region and how many teams go there, and it's not been a good event historically. So I think changing it for that reason is a good reason to change it. And that means you have to kind of change everything or shake it up. I'm okay with that. I do like the idea of an event in the East, like somewhere in Poland or maybe even further east, Ukraine or something like that. Probably somewhere in the European Union if possible. It's easier to travel.
Yeah.
But it's probably work out cheaper a lot of times. Like, I've been to the Polish tournaments, the ones over there. A lot of time you get cheap accommodation, cheap beer. When at ECF was in Wrocław, I had a great time. Like, we went out every night to Pelt Lads, and like, I'd spend like €20 and get absolutely smashed drunk. And I was like, this is fucking great. So I'm all for that. More stuff happening in Eastern Europe. As long as Zoltan is in charge of it, it should be fine.
Right. I think he's going to be in charge of all of it. But what do you think about this April then? I think they're trying to make it like the European version of the US Open. They said that they might even want to invite international teams once it gets more established or right away. They're still working on details of that. But I mean, I guess Windmill is kind of that already, right? And that's probably going to be your counter argument. But maybe having an official event, it can progress the sport in a direction. And I think that direction could be good. It could help to generate more fans, might make Ulti League actually happen if more people are paying attention to Ultimate. But yeah, you don't see anything like that?
Yeah, like, I like the idea of, like, okay, there's a space for something like Bologna Invite where it's like very much an elite tournament, because Windmill and Toms, you know, they always have a lot of space for people who are going to drink beer and party. So I think there's just a market there, and like, naturally Bologna Invite has come up and teams have wanted that. I know they've done stuff in Frankfurt before where they've actually just invited teams. And there's opportunity to grow that space, and maybe it's alongside ECF, maybe it happens naturally and you just get tournaments like Bologna Invite. So I think that's fine to do those things. I'd just be worried that teams that can't afford to attend these things might just make it a more financial barrier for people. That's my worry. And then I don't want the ECF to be like a super small event. I do quite like that they basically try and cram in as many teams as they can. I think it makes it fun. And I'm sure most teams just want to go to that more than anything else.
So, that's not going to change. And in that they want to eventually maybe do 16 teams per division, which is pretty much the same size we have now, but do that at the ECF. But just how you get there is different. And, I mean, that's the biggest thing is, like, our team's going to be like, we can't afford to play the European series. That's all the details. Like, what is required mean? Can they get their ranking points through local tournaments? Can they not? Like, that's all dependent on people calculating out an algorithm that'll be able to rank appropriately. But that's where I'm also a little worried, because I think for the top 8, top 10 teams, it's probably going to be fine. Those teams will be pretty clear anyways. Most divisions there are, is a clear like top four to top 10. But it's like when you're getting to that point where the team number 16 versus team number 17, only one of them gets to go. And like, do you really trust the algorithm and like the results at the random tournaments that weren't official? Like, is that enough to qualify? Whereas, you know, even USAU, they still just do that to calculate how many bids each region gets, but you still have to win the game at the region. So there's still some clear cut like qualification round, which I think is good for our like monkey brains to kind of understand, oh, they won that game, they get to go. I wonder if people will be able to accept that, you know, for qualification purposes.
Yeah, I don't know. Sounds like there's been a lot of thinking about it. So you guys figure it out. Let us know what's going to happen. Probably not going to happen anyway, but it's nice that you're doing all this thinking with the Europeans.
Cool. All right. So before we go, Liam, you wanted to mention something about Movember?
Yeah. So Pelt are doing Movember. And I, of course, will be doing it as well. I've never actually grown a mustache once in my life, and it looked terrifying. I might send you a video or a picture.
You don't seem like the type that could grow the best mustache.
What do you mean? Why'd you say that? Go on, elaborate.
Got a bit of a baby face, Liam.
I shave every 4 hours to keep this baby face. I can grow, okay, now this is going to be a spiteful mustache. It's not the quickest grower, you know. It's a slow burner, but I will have a mustache by the end of the month. Yeah, so we're doing this as a fundraiser for a teammate, Jordy, who passed away during the summer. Very, very sad. I didn't talk about it on the podcast when it happened because I was just too sad. I don't think I could have chatted about it, but I think this is a positive way of bringing it up for our teammate who was very young. And yeah, so I'll be sharing it on the Eurozone stuff and trying to hassle people to give me money. First, obviously, I'm not getting the money. It's going to be for, I think, I'm not actually sure. I presume it's a mental health charity of some kind. I'll know that next time. But it's along the same lines as most Movember campaigns. But I think we're all going to do it, and we're going to be like posting fun stuff. So you can follow me on that. I'll be doing my Instagram. Alison Davis said she'd give me money for it if I shout her on the podcast. So anyone wants to give me money, I might shout you on the podcast. Or you don't even have to do it. All right. Yeah. But you'll be seeing lots of terrible pictures of me with a really bad mustache, if you were to believe Ravi. I have a video of, well, I did one for like 6 hours. I like had a little beard and shaved the mustache, and it was so terrifying for children and people of the town that I needed to get rid of it.
Could we post that on the Facebook, or should we post that for subscribers only on the post of this podcast? Only subscribers can see that on the Elseworld.
People will pay to see it or pay to. Probably pay to unsee it.
All right, so we'll try and put that under the subscriber link. So go to the LT World site on this podcast, and I'll try to put that video of Liam. Okay, that'll do it. We're about to go and record our subscriber bonus segment, where you have written here, you want to talk about some spooky stories. Is that right, Liam?
Yeah, I love we have our show notes for people listening, and my two contributions are, I want the podcast to be called Lockdown 2 Electric Boogaloo, which I wrote at the top. And then for subscribers only, I was like, oh, spooky stories. I haven't actually quite thought of what they're going to be, but it's like Halloween. So it'd be nice to do some spooky ghost stories. I have some funny tournament stories that I could spooky them up a bit. We could do it too. Spooky noises in the background.
Well, if that doesn't convince you to subscribe to LT World, I don't know what will. So I think that'll do it here for this episode of Eurozone. I've been Ravi Vasudevan.
I've been Ian Grant. We will eat you later. Darling.